Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Good evening. Has anyone arrived?
Okay, hi, well. This is Sam. Sam here in Tampa, Florida.
Yes, well, thank you for coming, and I don't know if we have anyone else, but we'll give them, a few more seconds, and just ask you how's your day going, and I guess we'll use up some airtime, just chit-chat back and forth, and then we'll get the show started.
Well, good evening, everyone.
Oh, yes, here we go. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. So who do we have there on the line? Who is that?
It's Bernice.
Good evening,
hey,
my sister.
Sister Bernice. How you doing? All righty.
I'm doing just fine. Good to hear your voice. Everything's good.
Good.
Fantastic.
Well, I don't know. It's 6 or a little after, so should we go ahead and get started?
Let's go ahead and get started.
Okay, then.
Sure.
And I would like to say, good evening, brothers and sisters. Ramadan Mubarak to Muslims worldwide. Yes, sir. My name is Sister Joyce, and I live in Oklahoma. I'm one of the co-directors for the New Africa Business Association, where we focus on business as well as economic development. We are pleased to host this evening's broadcast of the open mic for the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio program. Sisters and brothers, in keeping with our premise of economic development, we've chosen building a community as our topic of discussion for this evening. And one of the things that when we bring you on the call for open mic, I would like for you to ponder this and keep this in mind. And I would like for you to say, what does it take to build a community? That's the question to consider, and your input will be greatly appreciated when the mics are open. The first component I feel, or the first components, I feel would be a strong as well as a solid foundation. And in those two words, any number of, I would say, things could be identified. In the construction also of our community, we will also need trust, loyalty, workers, ideas, suggestions, locations, and other major categories in this community development. And, of course, you may have some other ideas or areas that you would like to also suggest. And I would like to say, did you guys know that statistics show that up to 1979, the Negro community was the strongest economic community in the United States of America? That's something else I would like for us to discuss is what happened to destroy or seriously interrupt that cohesiveness. Ladies and gentlemen, we have with us this evening, and we may have some other guests as well, but we have 3 professionals in their areas of expertise who's going to share some of their background knowledge and their contributions to what it takes to build a community. This evening we have with us Mrs. Eartha Stone, and Mrs. Stone and her husband are private contractors for both residential as well as commercial properties. They're located in the state of Texas, but their services go well beyond that state. She is also the national director for Daughters of Zion for Black Wall Street. And she is a much dedicated member of New Africa Business Association. Our next guest is Mr. Sam Harris, who, along with his wife, operate a full-service real estate brokerage firm. Now, we have a brokerage firm and a developer right here together with us this evening. They specialize in a wide range of services to include purchases and sales, land brokerage investment, properties and opportunity zone advisors. And Mr. Harris will tell you about the focus being on the Black Belt districts. And ladies and gentlemen, these are some things that we need to really start thinking about, is making some investments together or individually, but we need to start thinking about those things. And their offices are headquartered in the state of Delaware. And we have with us Mrs. Bernie Swan, our educational consultant from the state of Delaware, who has more than 40-plus years of expertise in a variety of educational areas. Her organization, Lifetime Associates, is active in her community where she provides workshops, seminars, plays, poetry, skits, and other cultural activities to assist in building a community in which to live as well as prosper. I would like to invite each of you to think about joining New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, and you may join us by contacting either Brothers Belial or Aziz. 202, I'm sorry about that. You may call Brothers Belial or Aziz at area code 202-903-7278 or area code 301-234-9090. You may reach us also by email by going to newafricaba@gmail.com. Also, please join us on the phone call each Wednesdays starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at 657-383-1372 or blogtalkradio/NABSSC to join us on our internet participation. Again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us this evening, and may I present to you at this time Mrs. Eartha Stone. Sister Stone, are you with us? Hello? Okay, well, is anyone on the phone?
Yes, I'm here. This is Brother Harris.
Oh, well, Brother Harris, I guess maybe Sister Stone hasn't joined us yet. So if you would like to get us started, I would surely appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I just want to thank you, Sister Joyce, for the great introduction. And New Africa Business Association has been out here for a number of years doing what they do and to bring a group of individuals together to discuss how we can build our community. Not only is it necessary, it is timely. And in your commentary, you were asking the question, what happened? The African-American community, when we look at it, the family unit was displaced. But more importantly, the family unit was displaced, but we also traded in our entrepreneurship for jobs and opportunities to be what is called equality and acceptance. And if you look at our community or any community, the only way that a community can thrive is that you have to do business with each other and practice group economics. I've been in this business for more than 28 years. I'm a real estate developer, opportunity zone advisor, and capital raiser. We have traveled all over the country looking for opportunities and possibilities to help African-American entrepreneurs and families to be able to thrive and to do something to where we can make a mark that can never be erased. And through those travels, we found that there would be no Black Wall Street without the Black Belt District. The Black Belt District is an area that encompasses from Galveston, Texas, all the way up to Harlem, New York. The reason why they call it the Black Belt, because the soil is so rich. When our ancestors, the slaves, came off the ship through the Alabama River, through tunnels in Selma, Alabama, they went and they tilled the soil. They grew the most amazing crop that America had ever known, which is called cotton. The Black Belt is what they call the king of cotton. Cotton was traded all over the world. It made America rich. It made all the robber barons rich and the railroad barons rich because of the exploitation of our ancestors. What we're asking for, entrepreneurs, educators, engineers, developers, builders, capital raisers, anyone that has a positive look towards the future for African Americans, is to come join what we're doing. It's a movement for the Black Belt District to become a beacon of hope, opportunity for our families, not only present in the day, but for the future. The wealth of America was built in the Black Belt, and that wealth is still ongoing, and a lot of people want to hold on to that wealth. But what's happening right now is that we're having what's called demographic shifts. When our ancestors were forced to leave the South and migrate to the North and to the Midwest and to the West, they went looking for jobs because in the South they would work all day and not be paid. As they migrated to these other new areas that were unknown, they took with them the principles that they had learned and tilled in the Black Belt. Those families are now coming back home. They're coming back home because opportunities that were in the Northeast and the Midwest are no longer there. The factories are laying dormant. New factories are being built. State of Alabama has more factories being built than any other state in the United States. Why are we not leading the charge to take advantage of that opportunity? And the biggest reason that we feel is lack of capital. Not lack of capital that we have as individuals, group economics that we're not practicing. So just to give you an intro about who we are, what we're focused on doing, and we are looking forward to enjoying this conversation. Thank you so much.
Very, very good. And thank you, Brother Harris. And before we move on, is there any comments or ideas, suggestions, questions from anyone for Brother Harris? Does anyone like to add to what he has said, and I really do appreciate your explanation, Brother Harris, because you said things that we already know, or for the most. See, for myself, who came along at the end of, I'll put it like that, the end of what we call segregation, but I can see the community benefit of having that lifestyle during that particular time, because we had to rely on one another. I mean, it didn't matter if you were a doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, or a thief. If you were of color, colored, Negro, we all stayed in the same community. So therefore, as we lived in the communities from which we came, we did things together as a community. I was thinking a few minutes earlier about when I was a child. We didn't have what they call today meals on. If they had meals on wheels, they didn't roll into our community. Mm-hmm. But we had food on feet. And that's when Mom and them would cook up those, whatever they had, whether it was fried potatoes and onions or a piece of steak. We, being, you know, and we're the salt. You know, we scraping by, as they call it. But we found enough. It was like the bread, the loaves and the fish. We always had enough. We felt full if we weren't. But
absolutely,
we shared it with the ones in the neighborhood who were shut in, or the very mm-hmm. seniors who couldn't get out. So, ladies and gentlemen, these are things that we, and building our community, and also adding to our list. I'm serious about this list. Because this, I mean, this will happen one day, and that list will only help. So, I mean, I don't want to take up all the time because I get to run in my mouth. Has Sister Stone joined us yet? Well, perhaps she had something because that's a very, now she's a very busy lady for the community, and I'm talking about all over the globe if she could help you. So if we're going to move on, Mrs. Swan, are you ready to make your presentation?
Well, I won't say it's a presentation yet, but I am listening in, and I am probably going to present things as I see our conversation continue. And thank you so much from what I've heard so far. Very, very encouraging. Now, as a teacher for building a community, naturally I would always ask my students, before you use the word, be able to define the word. And very often we take for granted when we're speaking that individuals already know that everybody probably assumes the same meaning, understanding, or definition of whatever term we are talking about, only to find out as things move along, people are not on the same page with the term under discussion. Namely, tonight we're talking about community. So if we talk about community, and as a teacher, I would ask, what is a community to you? And from what I've heard you say, especially, Joyce, you have mentioned that the community is based on people probably of like-mindedness, and that's very true. But now we know that that kind of community no longer exists, maybe in spots and areas and corners, but collectively the community in America for the black community does not exist. There's been too much change over the years, as you said, even from 1995 up until now. Look at the constant changes that are taking place in what was once a community. We also talk about the concept of the village. And my goodness, look how we have digressed from what the village was into what the village is now. The village in our day principally was the African Americans living among one another and sharing their collective culture. Now you're in cultures where you have diversity. And so in some instances, there's still a black community, but in most instances, it is now filled with all different types of people, so there is a new adaptation. But I had decided I would look at this in terms of individuals, because when you look at things with a group, you assume that the group is on the same page. And as we know now in America, the black community is far from being on the same page. Even though we have wonderful ideas to present and beautiful perspectives that we can pursue, the black community is not organized and moving in that same direction. So we've got to find a way to get people interested in moving in the same direction. As you brought out earlier, Mrs. Williams, you were bringing out how in the black community people were doing things in a cooperative way. And now everybody is very individualistic, almost every man for himself. And so we've got to look at how do we change from this every man for himself, the nucleus kind of family, into making people adhere to what is our goal, what is our mission, what is our outlook, what is our long-term dream, and we don't have that right now. Every man is out there grappling for himself for the most part. So, looking at character traits, and that's something I'll be discussing as we chat, I would look at it from there's good character, there is bad character, and there is ugly character. All of these are now within the community. It's like if you want to be a healthy community, you have to start with the character. And so I would like to start with individually, people have to set an example. You have to set an example for what you want the community to look like, not what you want for yourself. You've got to, as the elders in the past, they looked at the community. Even when the children were outside playing or going to school or whatever, the community looked after that child. It wasn't just the parent. They had a community with a common goal for what they wanted for their children, and everybody became a parent, so to speak, to the child. You can't do that anymore because you have too many characters out there that are contrary to what would make a healthy community. So you've got to revisit, who do I want in my village? Because your village is now infiltrated with all types. And so we have a complete change from what we were used to in our day growing up in the village, in the community. And so we as individuals have to decide, let me be the character that I want my community to be. If you have a good character, that is what you are supposing your community to become. If you have a bad character, you are going to infiltrate the community with your bad thinking and habits and pursuits. And if you have a bad character that is just plain ugly, and we have that too, we've got to find a way to find a social medicine to cure that. Because if you put ugly in a good recipe, it's not going to taste very good. We've got to start with the small. And once we work with the small, then we can progress to the bigger and the better and the greater. So that's another thing that I was going to look at. And, of course, from the teacher standpoint and from the education standpoint, that is our whole basis of educating our young people. In the home, there is a presentation I can make on just the home alone. You cannot have a negative, bad or ugly home environment and expect your children to grasp on to great ideas for success. And the home is going to be the basis of seeing these things that we are now talking about wanting to do in the community. If the home is negative, then it's very difficult to get the eyes to be positive in their outlooks. And then in your acquaintances, the kind of acquaintances you have will determine your outlook. Negative acquaintances, negative outlook. When you talk about that goes along with associations too. What and who are you associating with? If it's negative or even ugly, then how can you expect to get greatness out of the community? All of these within that mindset of individuals. We've got to make sure people have the right character development in order to progress. And then we have to look at our outreach and our focus and our goals and our intentions. What are the intentions? Are they based on what you can individually achieve, or are you looking at what is going to do for the greater good of the community? So there might, and of course I have lots and lots of notes that I'll be sharing on that. And I don't know if others might want to say something as an introduction to what they'd like to talk about. But from those areas, that is where I will be putting my focus.
Yes, everything that you just spoke about, it all ties into what we have to do, and community is absolutely important. Community is a sense of common purpose where you have the same attitudes, you have some of the same interests and goals. You know, when you're talking about a community, it's a place that takes on a characteristic that is common among everyone that lives within that community so that we can build an ecosystem that allows us all to thrive. When you study the teachings of different cultures, one of the things that they base their foundation on of their community is education. But it's not so much formal education. It's education, how to treat one another, how to live together, how to conduct yourself, how to be a good person, how to add value to the marketplace. and continue to do that. And as you grow within that community or that society, you'll elevate to the more formal education to where you can do things that allow that community to not only grow where you come from, but outside of where you come from. If you look at some of the most amazing cultures in history, they can go anywhere in the world, and no matter what happens, they're succeeding. And I'm talking about the Jewish community. If you look at how the Jewish community teaches from education is the foundation. If you ever go into a person's home of Jewish faith, they have books everywhere in their home because they believe in education. But more importantly than just the education of books, they're educating us how to treat each other and how to conduct yourself to where you can bring value to the marketplace. So I absolutely agree with you. Community is about connecting, having the same characteristics so that we can thrive together.
Thank you, brother, very much, brothers, brother Harris and Sister Swan. That just was very uplifting. But, I mean, you guys are just what we used to call it deep. You know, this is really, really good information, and I'm hoping that the listening audience will do more this evening than just listen. We need some feedback, people. We need people to come on and say, we hear you loud and clear. We need to start working on building this we're not going to have a utopia. We're not asking for a perfect society. But we are asking for a community that we are proud of. Are you proud of the community today? And I don't mean just the community that you may live in your surrounding area, but I mean our extended communities. The things, you know, and ladies and gentlemen, you know, it's things, and we'll discuss a lot of things on this call, but we're going to discuss us right now. Because we're going around here, we're doing things that's just out of character, as Mrs. Swan had pointed out a few moments ago. We're taking each other out. I mean, we a pair of shoes, some sneakers. You know, when I was a child, or when we were children, our mother would go in. These kids, they wearing PF Flyers and all those kinds of shoes and Converse. Yeah, they had them back in the day. But our mom would go into that grocery store, and they would have those sneakers in the shopping carts. And mama would get off in there, honey. She'd pick up, I don't know, 5-6 pairs of them, I suppose. And they would be all kind of colors, white, green, blue, red, all kinds of stuff. And she'd bring them home, and she'd get them all in all kinds of sizes. And she'd say, just find you a pair that you can wear. Now, we would get out there on the road and line ourselves up across the road, and we would race. You know what we did back in the day. And those children with those expensive, what we'll call expensive, with those PF Flyers and the Buster Browns and all of them, they didn't beat us across the finish line in our little 79-cent shoes. We waited for them to get there. So it's not the amount of money that you put into something. It's the dedication, it's the heart, it's the soul that goes into it, and that's what we're looking to put into our community. So, Brother Harris, Sister Stone, have you joined us yet? Well, she must be. She's into something else.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, Kim, I don't know if you were able to join us or not. She was on a couple of weeks ago when she was telling us about an event that she had there in D.C. that was coming up with the, I don't know if that was the NFL, but it was some type of sports league, and she was going to come back. But maybe she'll be able to come back another day and give us her update or her report. So are there any questions so far for Mr. Harris, Mrs. Swan, or myself?
Sister George, this is Brother Isaiah.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Assalamu alaikum. Walaikum assalam, Ramadan Mubarak. And I just listening in before we're getting ready to break the fast and eat, but I wanted to say that what you're discussing tonight is very, very important to our people, especially in terms of this is one thing that we haven't thought about a whole lot, that in the process of things going on in our communities constantly, you know, the ups and downs in the African-American community, we must realize that there is another program out there that has been used in the military for many years, but it's been used on us for a long time. It's just that we were unaware of it, and it's called psychological warfare. And, you know, when you use psychological warfare, it's not just to get an individual, it's to get a whole nation of people to change the way they think about things in order for you to get something done that you want to get done in a big, big way. So there, and the psychological warfare that they're using on the African-American, and that is by constantly putting images as well as information out there that it's going to make, try to make our people or our race of people, or not a race, but our people, try to seem like we're not progressive in that. And this way, it muddles up, covers up, and totally makes it where people don't see the value of the African America, as Brother Harris would say, with the Black Belt Wall Street, coming from Texas all the way up to New York, and the richness of the soil, and Mississippi being the wealthiest state in the Union back in the day, the most wealthiest, Mississippi. But I just wanted to put that part in there about psychological warfare, and it's been used against our people for a long time by getting other people to believe in things that's not true about the African American. And one of the parts of psychological warfare is hate. We have so much hate produced out there. Hate is almost like a person that is blind and can't see. And I just wanted to put that foot out there, that little bit out there before I left, and thank y'all for having a fantastic show. And thank you again for letting me come in and put that part in.
And we thank you for your time, brother. Because paradigm shift. Is someone else got brother Bilal? You on here? Well, maybe he hasn't joined us, but I thought I heard someone else going to speak, so I'm going to be quiet.
Well, yeah, I was going to say with Sister Swan, when she was speaking earlier, she was talking about the every man for himself mentality, and that seems to be prevalent all over. And the only way to overcome that, I was just on a call with a pastor from Oklahoma, and my question to him was, how do we overcome the issues that we have within our community to where we have some that want to make progress and work together, and then you have a whole group that don't want to work together because they like the status quo? And his direct answer was to me, he says, I prayed about this a lot. He says, but the only way that we can do that is that we need to find like-minded individuals that want to be on the same page and work together, because you cannot convince and make everyone happy about what you're doing within a community or a network or organization. You have to start with the people that want to do good and want to make a difference. So with that being said, I think it will be very important for us not only to identify ways that we can make an impact in the community, but we need to be linking arms with individuals that want to do good and not waiting for the bridge, because wait is what broke the bridge. We need people to put in massive action now. When I go from Baltimore to New York City, Chicago, Selma, Detroit, Little Haiti in South Florida, Atlanta, Oakland, Houston, Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas, our communities are in ICU. And we can spend a lot of time strategizing what we think should work, where we should start. When we do that, we have a precious amount of time. So we need to begin with the people that are ready right now. And for those that are not, they can catch on later. But that's what the Black Belt District is all about. It's about us galvanizing together so that we can create something that we haven't seen in a generation. The last time that we seen the African-American community thrive was probably about 1979, Sister Joyce, when you were just talking about that. There was a study that just came out. It's called the DW documentary. And what it was talking about was African-American millionaires. There are more African-American millionaires than there are Hispanic millionaires. There are more African-American millionaires than there are Asian millionaires. There are more African-American millionaires than there are Indian millionaires. The only group that surpasses African-Americans in that particular category are Caucasian Americans. So we're in a very strong position right now to galvanize our community, to create a new direction so that we can make a mark that can never be erased. So I'm in agreement with Sister Swan. We have to find a way to get away from every man for himself to where every man can be for the community. Thank you.
And Mr. Harris, I think long and hard on our dream of building with those who, as you said, are of like-mindedness, those who are ready to do their impact. And, of course, we know that that also, once many see that done, even those who are, let us say, not very hopeful, when they see things like that as an example before them, many who were negative will then become hopeful and even positive. Now, one of the, I'll put it this way, here's the question I want you two to answer for me. In our pursuit for this upbuilding, we do not want a repeat of Tulsa. Remember, there are going to be those within our own community who are like-mindedness, ready to progress, and there are going to be, of course, unfortunately, those in our community who will want to tear down. We'll leave that alone, though, but we know that's going to be. Jealousy can happen. Now, my concern, though, is we do not want a repeat of another Tulsa. So your enemy is not going to like what we are about and what we are determined to establish. So help me with that. How can we, after we have a modern or a contemporary, very thriving plan and see that plan evolve into its fruition, what are our steps to make sure that the enemy doesn't come in, infiltrate all over again, and re-destroy? In other words, we don't want a repeat of Tulsa, and people are not going to be happy, those who are your enemy, those who think that you're getting, let's say, ahead of them. That's a fear among that type of mentality. What are we set to do so that no one can come along and blow that whole wonderful upbuilding back down again?
Oh, absolutely. Sister Swan, I mean, I can listen to you all day. Your voice is so eloquent, and I just love the way you think and the way that you position words, because I have a clear understanding of where you're coming from, and anybody that's on this call that are listening to you can clearly understand where you're coming from. And here's the solution. We have studied Black Wall Street. We have studied North Carolina, Brooklyn, all the Black Belt districts of America. We studied them. And the one common denominator that our ancestors that thrived in Tulsa did not have, we have to have a plan in place where we can create a Black Belt district that is thriving but is positioned so that we can duplicate. If we duplicate multiple Black Belt districts, it won't matter what anyone try to do. They could never take us down. The reason why Tulsa did not last, we did not plan for what could happen. We didn't know what was going to happen. but when it was burnt down, we had no plan of action to disperse to other areas. So here's how we would do it. If we could get a singular focus and focus on building one area in the Black Belt District, create the blueprint that once it works in Selma, Alabama, we can go to Tulsa. Once it works in Tulsa, we can go to Detroit. Once it works in Detroit, we can go to Oakland. Once it works in Oakland, we go to Chicago, Detroit, so forth and so forth. So we have to duplicate ourselves in every category. We can no longer be one-dimensional, two-dimensional, or three-dimensional. We have to be four-dimensional thinking beings and always thinking for the future, 50, 100 years down the road. As long as we collectively within the community can put our collective thoughts and energy and capital together, we can build the blueprint that can sustain not only our future generations, but generations that had not yet been born. That's how we can do it.
Thank you. It's
wonderful explanation. And to add, and I don't see where I could top it, so I'll just have to say, Mr. Harris, again, that you, the old folks say you hit the nail on the head, but I'll tell you this, we're going to have to do something. Like Brother Bilal always talks about, you know, circling our wagons, and I'll say that we need to, like you say, we got to circle here, and then we leave from here, and we got to go start our. We got to circle all the places where we want to be operating our communities, because let me tell you, these people who are coming in here from Ukraine, they're coming here. A lot of these people are coming here with deep pockets. Now we're talking about, and Brother Harris, I do appreciate the way you sit here and you school us and you tell us how we need to get investing in ourselves, in our communities. But we have not really come to focus with that concept, because if we don't have $1,000 or $500 or $5,000 for that matter, but if we come together collectively, we should be able to make a difference, because these people coming in from these other countries, they're coming in with money. And what we're looking at and what they call window, what it was back in the day when we looked through a window, wish list. Well, they're not going to be wishing. They're going to be buying. And then we're going to be all upset and mad and wanting to throw things, because the opportunities that are here for us right here, right now, we're sitting around, basically listening to people talk about it, discussing it, but no action. People, we got to get to action. So that would be my input, brothers and sisters.
Well, I certainly appreciate when you brought out the fact of the duplication. Now, the other thing I want to point out is, although we talk about the horror of Tulsa, remember we had at least close to a dozen or more Black communities, thriving Black communities, in and around the same time as Tulsa. We know that historically we are putting Tulsa to the fore, but when we look at the history all around this country, there were other wonderful, thriving Black communities that were already a duplication of Tulsa. They don't talk about it naturally, but when you go into the history of it, you say, my goodness, all around this country, these people, our people, already had thriving communities that were destroyed, just like Tulsa. The murders, the burnings, I think Tulsa was the first city and perhaps the only city that has ever been bombed from the sky. Our own country bombed the Black community. So when you're looking at how deep the hatred can be, anytime you have something of the very highest authorities who are also behind, don't let that happen, don't let that kind of progress happen, we had city and town after town after town of black communities who were experiencing the same thing Tulsa experienced. They had already duplicated, but you're looking at a higher up, a higher power in humans that was determined, I don't care how many Tulsas there are, we can't let this happen. Nevertheless, we know we're going to continue despite that kind of mindset. But I just want to point out there that it wasn't just Tulsa. You can
see
endless.
Absolutely.
Isn't that something? So that's something to think about. I did want to go into going back to dealing with individuals, and I so agree with you. We've got to move on. It's no such thing as everybody getting on that train and moving ahead. We never get ahead. We have to find those of like-mindedness, just like you said, Mr. Harris, and keep forging ahead. And I'm on that train with you. I did want to point out, though, as small as it seems, I'm going back to what Ms. Williams was saying in terms of those tiny little communities we came from and what was going on within those communities and our youth and our young childhood. I was in a town, I think it was in Baltimore, where I just happened to be going past some stoops, I think they call them, you know, when they're right there, the doors almost right there at the sidewalk. And there were paper wrappings and there were empty bottles in front of the home. And so the question, you know, just in chatting with people, you know, neighborhoods wanting to improve themselves, humble dwellings. But nevertheless, when the person was asked, are you going to pick that up? It's in front of your home. The person said, why should I pick it up? I didn't put it there. So when you have that kind of mindset where little things like that, when you're a teacher teaching the children, that's a big thing because your pride and your sense of worth and your sense of community and village starts with little things. Sure, it can progress to big ideas, and you have to start small to have the big. They're both going to work together. But when you have and of course, when you go along that street, there are more people with more wrappings and more bottles and unfortunately now even drug paraphernalia, and they're saying, I'm not cleaning that up, even though it's in front of my stoop. I didn't put it there. Imagine what that does when people drive through your neighborhood, if they even have the nerve to do it. Some of them scared, they do everything. They'll go 10 miles out the neighborhood, keep them going into our neighborhoods. But when you don't take a broom, and I know that might sound silly, but Joyce, you know what I'm talking about, Mr. Harris. You know, when you can't even take a broom or you can't take a glove and pick up some wrappings that somebody has thrown in front of your own home, not to mention your street, what is that saying about your sense of community, your sense of village? When people drive through your neighborhood, I don't care how humble it is. I don't care what the salary might be. Let people see a clean street. Let people see that, because that is saying, this is where I live, and I care enough for where I live, no matter how humble, to make sure it's not trashed.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Sister Joyce, if I can comment, what Sister Swan was speaking on about the other cities that were duplicated over Tulsa, she's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge that we had was none of them were connected. They were all isolated. They were individual cities. The people in North Carolina or Harlem, New York, they only dealt with people in their community. Because of technology, we will be able to create a web,
yeah,
a network that would allow us to cross over borders that our ancestors could not do and trade commerce with each other. Imagine if we had 50 cities that 80% of all goods and services that was purchased by people in those cities were owned by African-American firms. Example, if I lived in one of those communities, those 50 communities, if 80% of the people bought their real estate from an African-American real estate broker, or they built their home with an African-American developer, or they got their mortgage with an African-American mortgage broker, or they did their business with an African-American CPA or an attorney, and that the African-American teachers returned to their permanence to where not only were there educators in the classroom, but they were starch educators outside of the classroom, we would see something that our ancestors could only dream of, because we have the ability to use this technology to allow us to collapse time frames to where the things that they had to go through, we can actually leapfrog in a 10-year period of time. We've ran the numbers. If we can get enough, we don't need everybody, but if we get enough entrepreneurs that are high growth, that are hiring African-American talent from HBCUs, community colleges, people that have been in industries that don't have a high school diploma, that don't have a college degree, but give them the tools and resources they need, because now we're using technology to build a web, a network with these black belt districts that we're talking about, and they will not be able to compete with that type of dynamic because we will be insulated, because now we can do things that we could never do before, and we're constantly moving the needle forward to making sure we ensure that the next generation has the opportunity, have the opportunity to be able to build generational wealth that we all talked about. And the only way that we can do that is that we have to practice group economics. Education has to be paramount at the center of everything that we do. We can't just be teaching things that are in books. We have to show people how to chop a piece of wood, how to till land, how to grow a garden, how to paint a wall, how to do plumbing, how to treat your mother, how to treat your daughter, how to treat your girlfriend, how to treat your wife, how to treat your son, how to treat your husband. Those things are the intangible things that I saw with my own eyes, that I saw the elders do in our community. And we need to return to those types of principles and teachings so that we can be able to build on what our ancestors have gave us is a foundation. But for those of us that can see it, we can seize it. And I'll end with this. When we talk about the Black Belt District, it's not just talking about building. We're talking about creating an ecosystem where every industry could thrive, because we will be interconnected by using technology. By doing that and duplicating ourselves to where we can no longer have the threat of any one entity coming in and tearing our house down, because once they tear our house down in Selma, we can go to Tulsa. Once they tear down in Tulsa, we can go to New England. Once they tear down in New England, we can go to Harlem. We can go to Texas. We can go to Houston, because we got a place where we can reroute. We can redirect. We can do things that we couldn't do before. That's my two cents.
Brother Harris and Sister Swan, I do appreciate both of you for joining us this evening and giving us some very heavy information to not only think about, but to start living. Because the information that you guys have shared with us this evening, that's information to live by. Those are words to live. Those are things that you should want your children, like one of you guys had said earlier, generational, coming along to know how to be and live in your community, how to be nice, how to be kind, how to be firm when you have to be, but at the same time, learn how to be compassionate. Because it's going to take all of those ingredients to make our community what we want. And the community, like Mr. Harris was saying, it will not be just in one location. And I'm using the word community singular because when we start this, and it may not be in my time, but hopefully it will get started, and one day, Mr. Harris, it will come to fruition. And when it does, we will be one community, no matter where we are, and we will have the same type mindset. Now, we don't necessarily know the needs of each community because what they need in one place, they may have an abundance of in another. But surely, in any community that we go into, there are going to be some needs, and there will be needs for us to fulfill. And I would like to
remember, when we were growing up as children, and we were in Delaware for the most part, I don't care where we went in the black community in Virginia, North Carolina. Now, this is way back in the day.
Yes.
North Carolina, Virginia, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania,
yes.
Maryland, those black people had the same cultural way of thinking.
Yes.
It was
that's
already
right.
there.
Yes.
It wasn't grandiose. But
mm-hmm.
you
yes.
would have thought when you were in Delaware, when you went to Maryland, you would thought you were in Delaware. When you went to Maryland, you thought we were in Delaware. Because the mindset of all those black people
yes.
then was the
yes.
same.
Yes.
Yes, and you
yes.
felt home.
Yes.
You felt a sense
yes.
of being. You know, they say belonging. You know, like they talk about, what's his name, Maslow's hierarchy of need, of needs. Now, when you would be there and you felt like you belonged there, you didn't felt like an outsider, and you didn't even have to know the people. Sometimes, even further back, sis, they had what they, you know, they would this letter will introduce you to Bernice Bynum Swan. And take her into your home as you would take my child or your niece or nephew or whomever. And you know what?
That's right.
They did that. And you
that's
came
right.
in with the right mindset.
When you visited, I
love. And you know what? I want to give my sister another accolade. She is not just talking. She practices what she's preaching because I saw her in her own community with the paper and picking up. And you know what? She went, and sis, she went beyond her street. I watched her. I sat there on her porch and watched her. Cause
I was not going to bring that up, but when my husband and I first moved to that street, and that beautiful brick wall, it was the opposite us was no homes. It was a beautiful big brick wall, but you couldn't see it because it was overrun with vine, and underneath those vine were people had done all this discarding of stuff. Well, as soon as I moved there, I said, Bill, that's not going to look at me for while we're staying here. I said, we're going to clean that thing up. And I got these big clippers, and I started clipping the the vines from and as you clip underneath, you saw the mess. Well, then would you believe the grown-ups on that street sat on their porches to watch me, and after a while their children, but listen to this, their children looked at me and said, look at what that lady's doing. And they asked their parents for bags and brooms, and the kids came out there and helped me. We cleaned up that entire wall from one block to the other, and it never got that way again.
I was going to add and say, after a while, she had the whole street look like out there picking up and putting stuff in bags. But you know,
look at the equity that happened on that street. That street became so attractive. That's the stuff you do to bring value to your community.
Absolutely.
It starts with the small things, with pride.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Sister Swan, I mean, I can listen to you all day, and just listening to you give the story of you just making one act of kindness to show the people what it could be, that's what we have to do in our communities. I remember traveling to those different places you were talking about where all of our ancestors, they act the same. They thought the same, and you're 100% right. if there is a way that we can return to that, and you are a perfect example that we don't need 10,000 people. All we need is a few that believe and that would dare to stand up to make change. So thank you so much for what you've already done and what you are doing. It's a pleasure to be on this call with you.
And same with you. It's a delight. And I'm looking forward to our continued fellowship. It's wonderful. Remember that expression, if everybody expects somebody to do what anybody can do, nobody will ever get it done.
Come on, sir. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to say good evening. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion this evening on building our community and how you may add to the community that we're building. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you, Brother Harris. Thank you, my loving sister, Mrs. Swan, for joining us this evening in our discussion. And maybe next week, somebody will have some input. So until then, you ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful evening. Assalamu alaikum, Ramadan Mubarak, and good night.
Good night.